From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Happy St. Patrick's Day. It's not today, it's when we're recording this. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel, and my audio waveform is green.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deccant. Most importantly, you are you, you are here, and that makes this Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. Important announcement before we go into this week's listener mail segment. We are recording after a horrific series of events that took place in Atlanta, Georgia. A domestic terrorist took the lives of 8 people, is currently claiming this was somehow not racially motivated, most likely in an attempt to dodge the additional federal crimes that these sorts of murderers can and should be charged with. We haven't talked about whether or not to remark on this on air, but I do feel it should take precedent here for everyone listening who is of the Asian American Pacific Islander community. We are with you. This is another iteration of the continued rise in violence across the nation against people for no other reason than hatred and racism. As we said before, racism denotes, most importantly, a severe lack of critical thinking, and it has no space in any public forum. What do you guys think about that? I know I'm throwing a lot out there.
No, I mean, good Lord, man, you nailed it. It's completely true. And it's something that I think people were emboldened to do more openly because of a lot of availability of certain forums and a lot of really charged rhetoric around things like that. And the idea of feeling comfortable lashing out at folks who look differently, who represent a certain set. And, you know, the gentleman in question, I'm not even going to call him a gentleman, the absolute monster in question. The last thing he posted on social media was a screed about how China is the enemy and, you know, how we're being too soft on China and all of that stuff. And it's just an absolute conflation of like geopolitics with people, humans on the ground. They don't represent what's happening in China. And if they did, that's just, you know, I don't know. It's very disheartening.
It has no place. And the narratives that are coming out from the regional media initially as we record this are incredibly distressing. Local law enforcement has been saying some just buffoonish things. And we know, or at least I know, I'm very well aware of what the perception of the American South is in the U.S. and abroad. And our show, our team of 5 or so folks and 1 plastic skeleton and a Muppet that is somehow also an NSA intern named Steve, our team wholeheartedly, we are located in Atlanta and we stand against anything like this. To do otherwise is unconscionable. And I know it sounds like a little bit of a lecture. We are absolutely not the voices that should be reporting in depth on this because the people who will have the most impactful reporting are the people whose voices have historically been ignored for far too long.
I just have to agree with you guys. I don't have a lot to say on this. Just it's horrific. And, you know, we're reading about it today and I'm very close in proximity to where some of these events occurred. And right along this area, there's a large community of people that are in fear right now because of the actions taken by one person. The one thing I am thankful for is that the person suspected of these crimes was caught on camera pretty clearly at the locations. So this person who has been apprehended, it does appear like there's enough evidence to put this person away for a long time if they are found guilty, and hopefully they will be. And I'm just thankful that that has already occurred or is occurring right now. I would also voice to anyone out there who is, if you're listening to this and you are feeling some type of way because of something you've read or something you've been told, I would just say, do your best to read some other things, talk to some other people, and see what you can do to change your outlook, because this is horrible, and nobody should have to go through this.
If you have experience firsthand with horrific events like this, please, as always, feel free to reach out to us directly. We will give you many ways to contact us at the end of the show, or you can always simply pause and give us a call now, 1-833-STD-WYTK, or send us an email, conspiracy@iheartradio.com. Thank you very much for your time with our show. And as always, we look forward to hearing from you. And so, speaking of the most important part of the show, you, specifically you, listening today, tonight, wherever you're at, we like to take some time every week to share some of your stories, your feedback, your suggestions, your experiences, because they are crucial to the show. We've got some pretty crazy stuff here. We don't always do this. We all went with emails. We've got some scary stuff about big data. We've got some scary future stuff. Actually, this is a scary future stuff listener mail. We're talking about conspiracies to mess with your guts in a very literal way that seems fun and poo-poo humor at first, but quickly could become dystopian. We're also talking about, no kidding, robots. And who doesn't love a good, terrifying robot story? So big data, robots, and the guts. Where shall we begin, gentlemen?
Kind of want to start inside. Can we start deep, deep inside of us?
Yes, please.
Yes.
Like that movie, Inner Space. Let's hop on board.
Very well, then. Here we go. Travel with us, fellow conspiracy realist, into these guts.
Yes, up in them, in fact.
Our first letter today comes from Heather. And this is pretty brief, but it's succinct, and it opens the floor for an increasingly important exploration. Things that are going to matter to you later in your life and will definitely matter to anyone who comes after you. Here's what you said, Heather. Hey, guys, listening to your listener mail episode and heard you talking about microbiome testing. There was a company years ago called Ubiome that I had test my gut microbiome. It was really neat to see the makeup of bacteria living in your gut. There must be other companies now since this seems to be a growing industry. Keep doing what you do. Best, Heather. Thank you so much, Heather. This is one of those things that I've been like increasingly referring to as a phantom topic, because we'll have like our get-together brainstorm meetings. We're shooting each other ideas, and then we'll think, did we already cover this, or have we just sort of always been talking about it because it keeps coming up? Microbiome stuff. Public interest began in this a number of years after the science really hit some breakthroughs. And the essential thing is this. Like we talked about in this brain stuff video called How Farting Works, or Who's Farting Inside You, or something. Your body.
What are you farting inside of, or something like that, right?
What are you farting inside of? Yes. Your body, if you are a human being, is composed of an astonishing number of cells that aren't really you. Like biologically, technically, they're kind of like contractors. They're subsidiaries. If you want to be really classist about it, they're renting space from you, right? And you're at best their landlord.
That's so right. And you know, the best way that I've thought about it, Ben, is there are so many cells in you that don't share your DNA.
That's a great way to put it, Matt. Yes. In fact, do have more actual bacterial cells in your body than you do human cells. It's just those bacterial cells are much, much smaller. And then they're valuable members of the universe that is you. They do stuff. You need them. In some ways, you could say maybe you need them more than they need you, because bacteria are everywhere. A single human is not necessary to the life of an entire, you know, line of bacteria, right? And so when we look at the gut, the microbiome, all those different types of, what's that Star Wars cantina? Is it Mos Eisley?
Mos Eisley.
That's it.
It's the hive of scum and villainy, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So are your innards.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like, that's a good, I think, comparison for your innards. There are a lot of different folks in the mix hanging out, and your body then, or that part of your body, is now their Mos Eisley. A microbiome is the collection of these microbes and their genetic material, and it lives in and on your body. Your body doesn't, you're probably not going to notice them directly, because your body is a very crowded place. It's packed so full of bacteria, viruses, fungi. And the weird thing is, with all of this stuff in you and on you, as you're listening to this now, like when if you're listening and you're not driving or something, just like put a hand across your face, just caress your face real quick. Millions of things are jumping on your hand, off your face. There are face mites aplenty. There's some that evolve just to live in your eyelashes, your eyebrows.
And they're especially jumping from your hand onto your face.
Yes. Yeah. And the mites I'm talking about are actually, they're larger than what we're talking about when we say microbes. But the thing is, how mysterious is this? We have, as a species, spent a lot of time exploring space, exploring remote terrestrial areas, exploring the depths of the sea to the best of our ability, but we know comparatively little about our own microbial societies, right? Or civilizations, if we want to anthropomorphize. And that's where things like the Human Microbiome Project come in. It's trying to identify everything that lives on a given human being, and perhaps more importantly, take that knowledge to figure out what your microbiome, or what changes in your microbiome, may mean for you, the city, the universe that is you. It turns out quite a bit, Heather. Imbalances to your gut microbiome can make you susceptible to harmful bacteria and viruses. Like the bacteria you have now, theoretically, what you want to have is the good stuff. The stuff that's like, hey, I like living in Paul Mission Control Deccant or Noel Brown or Matt Frederick. I like living here and I want to do my bit to help keep this crazy contraption going. And then there's other, it also can protect you to a degree against what we'd see as bad or antagonistic bacteria, who's like, fresh unspoiled land that shall be mine. They're like the bad guys in Waterworld. You know what I mean? They want to like dam your rivers, mm-hmm. knock down the trees of your
lots of eye patches, you know, all around. No, it's true. It's true.
It is. Yeah. These imbalances can lead to things like they can affect your immune system. They can, of course, not to get too poo poo caca about it, they can affect your bowel movements, diarrhea, constipation, IBS. They can give you unhealthy skin, even things like faster aging, reduced cognitive function, wild mood fluctuations. This is important stuff, which means then it's an important test. And I can't just be the only one thinking about other tests that will tell you more about yourself, like on the genetic level, 23andMe, right? Ancestry.com. It's weird. Like this stuff provides information that is different, but could arguably be just as impactful in its own way.
Which all means- the words, Ben, like impactful when you're talking about your gut. Right. Like all the words here just feels like innuendo or referring to something that we're not. I love this topic. Sorry.
Oh no, you're absolutely right. I'm trying not to overthink it, but we have seen studies that tell us there is a link between certain aspects of the microbiome and death and disease. But people are still asking themselves, as recently as 2020, like people are asking themselves, what is the mechanism? Why does this work? Why are fecal transplants a real thing that are actual medicine? How can the microbes, those little things inside you, how can they be linked to everything from like arthritis to, you know, decreased cognitive function? Like, how can they have effects across so many different bodily systems? We don't have those answers yet, Heather. But just like an earlier example where we were talking about the early days of genetic testing, where it'd be kind of anticlimactic. You would get a test, you'd spit in the thing and you'd get a test back. And it's like, you're from probably maybe Europe or South America, or how ridiculous is this? You're from somewhere on the continent of Africa, by far the most genetically diverse concentration of human population in the world, right? Just because it's the oldest. But then that genetic stuff became increasingly sophisticated, such that now the test results you get are a world away, and those test results are being sold to third parties. That is absolutely, if it hasn't happened yet, that's what's going to happen with your gut, your microbiome. People are going to say like, hey.
People want that?
Yeah, people want to know everything about themselves. They're like, yes, tell me about my poop. Tell me more about my poop. But like, what happens if an insurance company, right, manages to have what they feel is a proven correlation between something in a microbiome and like a higher incident or higher likelihood of some sort of cancer, right? Or some sort of chronic disease.
Yeah. If anybody, you know, if that ever happens in the future and they try and make me cut back on my habanero intake, I'm going to be really upset.
And we have to move on, but there's one last thing here. First, I believe that this is a full episode because we're looking at emergent science, which always has the potential for amazing or disastrous knock-on effects. And we see, you know, again, we see startups, Ubiome being one, that are getting into this game early. Their goal, I can only assume, as long as they're private organizations, is to somehow monetize, commodify, or sell the data and the research that they get.
And there's a whole story on Ubiome about them doing all kinds of shady stuff early on and then collapsing completely. Mm-hmm.
So I think this is a full episode. I think that we are returning to this in the future. In the meantime, Heather, I hope this isn't something that makes you feel like there's some kind of like poop pirates out there just non-consensually trading traces of your microbiome. But that may very well be the case in a few years. So everybody, don't be scared yet, but get ready. Get ready to be frightened. And the really cool thing about this, to end on a less dystopian note, is that it is possible to change your microbiome, not just through a fecal transplant, but through the things that you eat, through your diet, through your exercise. So if you get a result you don't like at some point, then it is possible that you can, unlike your genetic code, easily change it on your own. Mm. So there we are. It's a brave new poop. Just think that every time you go to the commode. We'll pause for a word from our sponsor. We'll be back with more from you.
And we are back. Hopefully you have finished up in the bathroom there. If you're still going, that's fine. I don't mind talking to you in here. It's cool.
We're narrating this. We've made it. The best entertainment pre-cell phone was the stuff that people would read while they were in the restroom, right? Like Uncle John's bathroom readers. Did you guys ever hear about those?
Classic.
Oh, you know that news app gets lots of play while I'm on the throne. Lord. So we talked theoretically about, you know, future policing of our guts by these companies and possibly third parties. Well, now let's discuss macro policing. I don't know. Regular old policing and law enforcement and what's happening right now in the world of robotics and policing. Ooh, you guys. Is RoboCop is real.
News? What?
Oh, okay, so it's not good news.
Well, I mean, I rewatched RoboCop recently, and it holds up. It's quite a good satire because it's very much, I think it's got a reputation for folks that maybe haven't actually seen it as just being kind of like a brutish kind of, you know, action flick, but it has a lot of subtext to it, and it is about the dangers of automated policing.
Well, that's what we're going to talk about. Dangers on all sides here, guys.
I have a RoboCop toy, so I don't want to sound like I'm super anti-RoboCop.
I did too. I had the big one, the big figure. He would go, drop it. I just remember him saying, drop it.
Did the thigh open up? And with we're talking the, like with the side gun arm? Holster?
Yeah. No, I had the action figure with a car.
Oh, cool.
No, those are really cool toys. And I remember saving up or doing chores. I had like a chore wheel of some kind or like a progress report. And if I did well, I would get a toy of my choosing that I would, you know. And one of them was the Not the Mama plush baby from the show Dinosaurs. You'd pull a string and he'd say all various cute things. And another one was the Murphy kind of large format action figure.
I like the karmic nature of the wheel there. That's philosophical. But yeah, RoboCop. Okay.
RoboCop.
That's our entry.
Yes, we're going to read something from James C. here. It's very short and succinct, and I love it. But man, he sent us on a journey. For this segment, guys, I'm going to request that you go to a website called nightscope.com. KNIGHTSCOPE.com. So you go there. Hey, if you're listening to this on the toilet, a great time to go to nightscope.com. Once you're there, I'm going to read what James sent us.
That's what we mean by commodification in this episode. Sorry.
Oh, Lord.
All right, we're there.
So Jim says, I was just wondering if any of you have seen or heard about Nightscope Incorporated. I just saw a commercial about this company promoting its security robots. Is this just a flash in the pan company or something we as a society should be worried about? Well, we'll tell you. So first of all, if you go to nightscope.com, a pretty slick website, it's looking good. Do you guys see that first image on the screen there?
Little four-wheeler, but where's the seat for the driver, Matt?
There's no seat for the driver because that baby is autonomous. It looks like, I don't know, a cross between the Knight Rider car and something Batman would drive.
Tron.
And a Tron motorcycle, but with four wheels. It looks pretty incredible, and it's a real thing. That's not a CGI rendering. That is a real world, probably a prototype at that time. Maybe not. Maybe that's an actual rollout version of this robot. But it is a robot meant to be a law enforcement officer of one form or another. And Nightscope produces all different kinds of robotic law enforcement things.
Accessories, perhaps?
they may gain sentience at some point. So let's call them like early version RoboCops.
Teammates.
There we go. So if you click on a couple of these different versions, you can see that they've got a model that is called the K1, the K3, the K5, the K7, and then something called a KSOC. And we just want to go over these really quickly just so you have an understanding of what this is and you can explore along with us. The first one is called a K1, and I think the K3 is very... No, it's just the K1. The K1, it's basically a standalone machine that sits in an office or, you know, in an entryway for an office building or something like that. And it's designed to scan people that are moving past it or that walk up to it. And it's really interesting. You can do like security credentials through the thing. You can do coronavirus testing and like temperature checks and all kinds of diagnostics for the humans that walk up to the thing. It has a bunch of cameras and sensors on it that can do all kinds of things. And you can actually if you go through the website, you can look at all of its capabilities. All of like the facial recognition on it is pretty crazy, apparently. It also has physical deterrence. So this is, I'm going to read this part. It has a highly visible physical presence. That's what the website says. It does eye level video streaming and recording, and it can provide entry and exit point monitoring. So really a fancy security monitoring system, really.
It's a Sentry.
It's a Sentry, but it doesn't really do much. It's not like it's got lasers on it or arms that come out and grab you or something. It will take images of you doing something you're not supposed to do.
So right? It won't light up a boardroom full of executives like the thing in RoboCop.
At this point, the K-1 will not do that. I guarantee it.
That's a small comfort.
But if that's what you're looking for, wait, there's more.
It only gets more sophisticated from there. So the next thing, called the K-3, this is a, quote, fully autonomous security robot for indoor use. This thing has all kinds of interesting things. It has autonomous detection stuff. It's got, according to them, robust communication, remote monitoring, and it can broadcast messages. So,
and it looks like a Dalek.
It does. No, it looks like a Dalek.
Which is, for any non-nerds out there, is sort of like a trash can with like some kind of probe looking thing sticking out of it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is somewhere between, it's like if R2-D2 and a Dalek get together for their sci-fi family reunion, then this is a cousin that shows up from like the swankier part of town.
Got it.
Yes. It's only for indoor use. That's important. And, you know, again, it's not doing anything. It doesn't, at least according to their site and right now, it doesn't have any kind of crime stopping, you know, abilities. It's all about monitoring and recording and alerting. That's what it does. Now, if you jump to the K5, and I think it's K5 is the one that has been spotted in a lot of cities around the world, because this thing is in use on the exterior of buildings. It is like a slightly larger version of the K3, the very, very similar build. Looks kind of like a cone, really. That's the way I would describe it. It's got a bunch of cameras and sensors on it. It rolls around. It gives messages out. It will publicly say things like, make sure the park is clean. Don't loiter, please.
With a strong implication of or else.
Kind of. Yeah. But it has the ability to essentially be a recon drone or a monitoring drone, essentially, for a human security force. And what it does is, again, it just kind of has a patrol, but it has an actual patrol. It's autonomous. It goes around, you set up the patrol, and it does its thing. And what it does is connects with the law enforcement or security, you know, group inside a building, generally using that KSOC. It's the Nightscope Security Operations Center software and sometimes hardware that they provide. So it's just got a direct comm link essentially to that. Usually that is then that the communications office or the operations center is connected directly to a local law enforcement agency or something. So it's almost like a home security system at your house. If somebody, you know, tries to break into my home, like right now, if it was occurring, my security alarm would be triggered, which would then go directly to the local police department that's right here. Same deal. But it doesn't always work that way in practice, and we're going to talk about that really quickly in a moment. But I have to tell you about the K7. This thing is just ridiculously cool looking. There's not as much information on it on the website, which is a little sad, but the thing has four wheels. It looks like Tron, as you said, and the wheels all turn separately. So the thing can like just rotate itself in a circle. It can strafe, like move to the left or to the right. It can go forward or backwards, and it can turn just in these beautiful ways. And apparently it can go pretty fast. They're not saying how fast it can go yet, the maximum speed, but they are saying it it's multiple terrain. It can go over a bunch of different places. It just, it seems super dope. And it's also large enough that I think eventually this would be the model, or one similar to this could have some kind of actual munitions, whether that's, you know, some kind of non-lethal thing, or even eventually lethal stuff at some point in the future.
I do want to point out, no matter what its speed is, the way that it's designed to be more like an automobile, maybe something for urban conflict, but something that could also potentially, you know, you could rig it to navigate off-road terrain. I also thought about the platform thing here. They would have to sacrifice speed for that, but they're still going to be faster than the K5s and below, because the R2-D2s here, their top speed is 3 miles an hour. So they are very slowly doing that autonomous patrol. If they're telling, like, if you are out there stealing whatever people steal, water. If you're out there stealing water, then they will tell you, like, you are being apprehended. Your photo is being uploaded. And you can just walk away. You don't have to run. You can fast walk.
Or give it a swift kick. These things, these things look like they will topple right over, and they are. It's not like they're light; they're pretty heavy, but they're cone shaped, and they've got wheels on the bottom. So, like, if you're good at kicks, you can knock one over pretty easily. I'm assuming. I haven't run a demo. I haven't run any testing with this, which you can run a demo, by the way, if you're a company that is really looking to up your security, or at least go change it in a revolutionary way. You can get a demo, you can request one, and they will bring someone from the team will bring you some of these robots to show you what they can do.
I'm just picturing us in some future protest scenario where they're like, oh no, the robots here, run. And then Matt jumps out and goes, calm down, everyone, I'm good at kicks.
Front kick.
Yes.
just like a little you know, and they just like topple right up. I mean, those Daleks, man, they were notoriously flimsy, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. You may not have to kick them. I'm going to read you a story from Gizmodo from October 2019. Here's the headline. Useless police robot fails to call for help when needed.
Oh, boy.
So it's a story about a woman who observed a fight that was going on in a local area. In California, I'm just really quickly running through this. I don't even know exactly where it was in California, but she ran up to the robot like, okay, here's an officer, essentially. Hey, well, there's something going on. We need help. And like hitting a button that essentially is alert the local police, and nothing happened. It didn't do anything. It continued to tell everyone to keep the park clean, and it told her to get out of the way. It's like, please move out of the way. Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm doing my rounds, get out of here. So they ended up having to call 911 in order to get a police presence there.
Didn't one attempt what could be anthropomorphized as suicide?
Yes. There's a CNBC article from, I think it's from The Verge as well. I don't know if it's, maybe it is from The Verge originally, by Nat Garon. Mm-hmm. It was published in 2017, and it says DC security robot quits job by drowning itself in a fountain.
It's a depressed robot too.
Oh, we've all been there.
Yeah. And you can actually see a tweet from high above there near the offices where if there was a fountain that this thing just went right into, and that was it. But again, these things in their current form are pretty susceptible to physical manipulation if you're into it. But be aware, you will be on camera. Your audio will be recorded. You will be seen if you try and mess with one of these things.
Also, facial recognition technology is inherently fraught with problems that people are trying to work on now. But keep in mind that depending upon how you look or how that camera believes that you appear, you may be endangering other people that law enforcement just assumes look like you. This has happened. I hate to say it, but facial recognition still, as we talked a little bit about in our episode on Clearview, AI. Mm-hmm. Facial recognition still has some problems that rightly lead many critics to call it racist.
Oh, yeah, that's true. All right, look, before we get out of here, guys, I'm going to give you some stats. This is coming from Business Insider, January 2020. This is information on Knightscope. At that time, they had about 50 robots that were deployed across the United States, and it costs, well, it depends on the model. They're saying it costs somewhere between $60,000 to $70,000 to lease a single robot for a year term. That's a lot of money. That's like a salary, right? $60,000 to $70,000 was a really good salary for maybe a security officer. I don't know what the running salaries are for a human to be working a job like that, but they're saying that Knightscope has raised over $46 million in funding, at least as of that time last year. And there's all kinds of interesting stuff. Essentially, they're talking about what the future could hold, but there are problems like mall fountains. One of these robots ran into a toddler because of I guess it couldn't see it or something was malfunctioning.
Rode off. Get out of the way, kid. This is like pre-Christmas Day Scrooge as a robot. Yeah.
So I would say Knightscope in general has a lot of growing to do, but they've been doing it since 2013, guys. That company was founded in 2013 as a response to terrible things that happened around that time. I believe it was on their website. They say it was the Sandy Hook shootings and the Boston Marathon bombing. Those were the two events that caused this group of people to decide, hey, well, let's do some kind of autonomous thing where we can take humans out of that immediate danger role of trying to interact with a suspect or someone, suspected of committing a crime. I think it could be good in the future, but for me, it's really terrifying. If you're at Knightscope, hit us up, tell us about the cool things. Hey, maybe run us a demo of that K7. I want to see the K7 in action. If you got one of those, bring it down here to Atlanta, or let me know where I can watch it for a while and just check it out.
Careful what you wish for.
I mean, basically, is the takeaway here, this is not like, I mean, I know that some of the videos of the Boston Dynamics robots get kind of ragged on because they're sort of dumb looking, but they're also cool looking.
They're incredibly good at moving.
That's what I'm saying. This is not that. This is like some like step down kind of bargain basement version of that kind of tech.
This is not, dude, I'm telling you, it's not bargain basement. It's really sophisticated, interesting stuff.
But it's not as cool as that. It's not as sophisticated as that. That's like the top tier. This is maybe middle tier, let's say.
But if Knightscope and Boston Dynamics had a baby and created a thing that was like one of those little panther creatures that Boston Dynamics is creating and had the capabilities of one of these things that Knightscope is creating, you would have a legitimate, terrifying and probably crazy effective law enforcement robot.
Something capable of doing a little Fortnite dance after an extrajudicial killing, right?
Orange justice, you say?
Or just a brutal takedown?
Well, the thing is that research into this technology has to exist. Like that's what people can see as a dilemma. Even the critics, the human species is very, very bad at saying, oh, we can see the potential problems with this research. Let's agree not to do it. I mean, keep in mind, we're still making nuclear weapons, right? People are still working on that. And everybody knows what those things are designed to do. I would say, it contains so many exciting, arguably vital fields of research. The question is, the same question early humans ran into with fire. Are we going to use this to help ourselves or to harm others?
Or to annihilate ourselves?
Mm-hmm.
Burn ourselves to the ground. That's certainly an option. We seem to be inching closer and closer towards Huzzah.
Yeah. And hey, they're not the only company, Knightscope, by the way, that's creating these kinds of robots. So,
why does it have such a sinister name, Matt?
What? Knightscope? Are you kidding me? Knightscope sounds amazing.
That sounds like a creepy cop character in a Mortal Kombat game, dude. Like, I mean, or like some kind of prowler. Like, no. It's not good branding.
I think it's badass. If you go down to the very bottom of their website, you can see, at least right now, as we're recording this, you can see a little thing that says, is that night scope, K-N-I-G-H-T scope, or N-I-G-H-T scope? It's K, night scope. But they've got an image of several of their robots around a table, and it looks like Knights of the Round Table.
Dope. There was a cartoon about the Knights of the Round Table a long time ago. I don't know. I can't remember the name. Just someone tell me what it is, because I can't remember. But to your point, guys, to me, either the KN night scope or just the regular N night scope, they both sound like they would be a character in Suicide Squad who yes. dies really early
right.
because like Dead Scope or something says there's only room for one. Night scope is just a guy in full like in medieval times armor, but then he also has a scope. And it's on both of his eyes. And they're like, what's your power? And he's like, I can see slightly better than I would ordinarily be able to see in a suit of medieval armor. And then I don't know what night scope, I guess they see in the dark. Anyway, those folks are not going to make it through the whole comic book or film.
Pretty wild, though. Matt, sorry if you mentioned this, but I just pulled up. There's a page. It's like a startup like investment page called Start Engine, and Nightscope is on there, and they have raised $10,110,233 in this cycle that's happening right now. And it says previously crowdfunded $43,535,226. So this is obviously like, you know, GoFundMe on steroids, specifically for startups. And on the page, it does show, it's a video, but the still frame of it is that car you talked about, Matt. And I will say it immediately looks like a giant roller skate,
huh.
A giant futuristic, like the kind of roller skate that Prince maybe would wear.
Or R.I.P. that Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table would have used.
If you say so.
Well, you know, I didn't stay awake the entire history class
fair.
That day.
Fair. Interesting stuff, man. I mean, mm-hmm. what's your takeaway though, Matt? Like, terrifying? Let's be real for a second. I know there's some cheeks and tongues and cheeks here, but terrifying, cool, effective, potential. I mean, like, I don't know. It just seems like a real slippery slope.
I just want to be on the side of Nightscope. So I think it's the coolest thing, man, ever.
You're a monster.
It's dope.
You're a real monster.
Well, they're real and they're coming. So
and
like
they're listening right now.
Well, also, really, we're in the infancy of this. I mean, it feels like there's a lot of progress and a lot of terrifying things, but the closer technology, the more sophisticated this kind of technology becomes, the more closely it engages in biomimicry, right? So I'm keeping an eye out for the spiders or the things that can move the way a spider would move. That is going to be, I think, a little more difficult than an automobile that's limited somewhat in its direction, even with the very clever design of these wheels or the rolling cones. So keep an eye out. Keep an eye out for those spiders.
Oh, just gotta add real quick on this this crowdfunding page. They make some pretty interesting arguments. They've got a tagline here that says humans can only see so much, but robots can see much more. And then there's a whole section called The Problem. Innovation in the security industry has been stagnant for decades. Guess what the picture is, guys? A security guard asleep at his desk with an open box of Chinese food in front of him and a tipped over soda cup. They're coming for our jobs, guys.
Maybe he's in a class on medieval history.
It's possible.
I feel like I was in that same position. I think they should let you eat in college classes. This has nothing to do with anything. But I think it helps people learn. So
would they stop you? Would the professor be like, Mr. Bolin, kindly put down the ramen?
I think you mean quesadilla.
I did, in fact, get stopped and threatened with a thing that is not real, which is contempt of class. But this guy was so hardcore, I thought maybe it was a real thing.
He didn't whip out your permanent record?
No. Guys,
I will hold you in contempt. Sorry, robots. Yes,
we've gone on this way too long. We need to take a break.
Yes.
We're way over time. I'm sorry, Paul. Cut any of this that you can. All right, take a break. We'll be right back with more listener mail.
And we're back with more listener mail. That's mail from you. Yes, you. Right there, sitting there at this very moment. And that person that I am referring to is Louise Superstar. You know who you are. That's right. you asked to be referred to as Louise Superstar. And I'm going to read this email because it's a doozy. It involves some questions that I think a lot of people have, or at least some, let's just say, suspicions that a lot of people have about how often and how much do these home assistant devices actually hear? Do they only listen when you say that magical wake word, or are they listening all the time? And where does this information go? Does it just disappear into oblivion, or is it stored somewhere? And I think we know some of these answers, but it's interesting to hear from the inside perspective, from someone who was actually there. So this comes from Louise Superstar, who asked to be referred to as such. And I'm going to abridge it here a little bit. I live in the UK. When I finished university in 2019, I got a job as a data analyst for a company called GlobeTech. If there was just a Globo at the end of that, it would sound like a made up, like jokey conglomerate company like GloboChem, which I think is from Mr. Show, maybe. The interviewer was very vague about what the job would be about, but it paid very well. And I had nothing else lined up, so I accepted the position. When I started on the project, I was surprised by how easy the job was going to be. The idea behind the job was to help Apple improve its virtual assistant Siri by doing basically spot checks of some recordings that purportedly took place when the wake word was spoken, being "Hey Siri." Sorry to everyone out there with a Siri that I just, you know, triggered. Back to the email. All I had to do was listen to Siri recordings and answer questions about how clear the audio was. Did the user have a clear intention? Did Siri complete the right action? And then grade how well I thought the interaction was overall. I was expected to listen and grade over 1,000 recordings a day. So just to sum up a few things, there aren't personal details like the name of the Apple ID associated with the clips or any kind of personally identifying information about the individual. But what was deemed necessary for data analysts to see were the exact locations where the audio clips were recorded, names in the contact lists of the user's devices, and occasionally we could even see the playlists and apps on their phones. Okay. Not only was I freaked out about how much information was being shared, but also how often Siri is accidentally triggered and saves these recordings and sends them along. During the 2 months I worked on the project, I heard people having sex through the HomePod. Yeah, same. I don't have a HomePod.
Not me.
Okay, fair. Long audio clips that sounded like they were recorded during therapy sessions through the Apple Watch. And a lot of people arranging affairs. Bear in mind that we could see the exact locations of the recordings, so it could have been very incriminating if someone on the project was to recognize the address. And more drug deals than I can count. This seemed to be because the noise of a zipper on a bag opening and closing set Siri off. Wow. I was only on the project for 2 months before there was a whistleblower working on a similar Apple project for the same company in the Netherlands, which resulted in the UK and Ireland projects getting shut down as well. I will include an article below, great article, which I will link to or mention in a second, so you can look into it a bit more. But I would like to point out that as this took place in 2019, it was before Apple gave users the options to not share their data, and there was nowhere users could even see which aspects of their data were being held and shared across the globe. The other important thing to note is that there was no vetting for this position, and there was such a high turnover of staff. If you failed to meet your targets a few days in a row, you would get fired. And there were inductions for new staff members every single week. I think this is a fine place to stop.
One thing that's important is that it's prevented her, after doing this job, from purchasing Apple products, specifically an Apple Watch, because mm-hmm. she's aware of how active Siri can be in hearing things and recording them and sending them.
Sure. Like if you work at a slaughterhouse, how many hot dogs do you eat on a given day? You see how it's made.
They're free hot dogs, Ben. I would assume all the hot dogs, but
that's true. I'm not applying this rule to myself, but I'm a garbage
food
disposal
analogy.
As am I. Yeah. And look, I say this as a person with a smart home. I have Alexa, and I have that. Sorry again for triggering everyone's device there. But I have that controlling a Sonos situation. I have smart lights, you know, connected up to that system. I have it in my bedroom. I have one in my kid's room. It is something that a handful of, you know, friends of mine, my girlfriend included, they're kind of freaked out by. I love the convenience of it, and I'm a nerd for tech stuff like this, and I'm fully aware that this is a possible thing. Do I feel like I'm going to have an FBI agent knocking on my door because Siri hears me smoking a bong? I kind of doubt it.
Well, now they're lining up now.
Well, I'm just saying, man, like I choose to live my life somewhat blissfully ignorant about this stuff, even though I'm not ignorant to it at all. But it's fascinating when you think about it. And this article from The Guardian, it confirms this stuff is the case for us, Alexa as well. And that there are, you know, similar whistleblower situations in projects like this. Yeah, exactly.
All of them.
A company called Counterpoint Research indicated that Apple has 35% of the smartwatch market and more than three times its nearest competitor, Samsung, and more than its next six biggest competitors combined. And the smartwatch is the thing that follows you around everywhere you go. So that's probably the biggest creep factor in this, right? They're hearing stuff, you know, happening in all locations. Drug deals, pinpoint that stuff. Let's say you're maybe not just buying a dime bag of weed, but you're moving some serious weight or something like that. I mean, surely people that are doing that are being more thoughtful, but I would definitely tread lightly, you know, if you're rocking an Apple Watch.
Biomedical data.
That's for sale. You know?
Yeah. There was a study I saw recently that said, more than 1,000 phrases will quote unquote accidentally awaken Alexa, Siri, and Google Assistant. More than 1,000. That is insane. You have to wonder what they are, right?
Well, you can usually tell because the thing goes boop, you know, and a lot of times it'll be dialogue in a movie that I'm watching. That'll trigger it, and then it'll duck the volume down, which is annoying. But absolutely, the idea of the sound of a zipper is fascinating. No wonder there's so much sex being recorded. So the moment you hear that zipper go, probably a lot of people urinating too, I would imagine, being recorded. That's got to be a fun one to hear. But yeah, man, it also said a lot of therapy sessions, extended recordings of therapy sessions, very personal and potentially identifying information. It's something that everyone should be well aware of and either, you know, go forward with open eyes or, you know, throw out all your personal assistance if it freaks you out.
Well, it's funny because one thing that you'll notice with a lot of engineers, especially engineers who work in these fields, is that their homes are going to be much more analog and mechanical than the average home. Like I don't know. I know you're out there, folks, but I don't know a single engineer who likes surveillance cameras for security, or would have any of these personal assistance devices in their home. The laws just aren't there yet. Like I think just now, I can't remember if it was Florida or the entirety of the U.S., there is finally a bill that will attempt to make your stuff actually private, with at least with Alexa. Yeah, here it is. It's just a few days ago, March 9th. There's a Senate committee that just cleared a proposal to ban warrantless searches of cell phones and warrantless searches of voice-activated devices like Alexa, Google Nest. But that's just clearing the search. That has nothing to do with these things capturing this information. And Noel, Louise, superstar, to your point, that's the tough part here is that it's very easy for companies to do this on purpose and say that it occurred by accident. Like, how would you prove that it is a bug and not a feature? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. And I also have some, like, everybody who, it's so funny when we talk about how the passage of your automobile is monitored, how your internet usage is constantly monitored by someone, even if it's just an ISP. The age of privacy is very, as we understand it, was very short-lived, and it's over. We are in the post-privacy era. Privacy is like a luxury of the elite at this point. That's why you don't hear a lot about the world's very important wealthy and powerful people. That's why their images are carefully managed. And whenever we talk about surveillance, as Matt, Noel, and I have all said at one point or another, you got one of these, you got one of these light ups, not just for waving at concerts.
Right. By the way, guys, right. For a long time, I've operated with my phone's location services off, like no permissions allowed to any of these apps for my mic or my camera. I decided to give in recently. I put on my location services, put on my significant locations, did all that stuff just in case something happens to me. You guys could find me or at least locate my phone.
Oh, you gotta find my phone on there.
Oh, that's yep. Like I said, it's a thing you have to weigh. How does the convenience of this stuff benefit me in my life and maybe the lives of my family members and the convenience or the peace of mind or what have you? Or am I so freaked out by it that I just would rather just opt out of something like that entirely? I mean, to me, I'm fully aware of the trade-off, and I choose to choose the convenience and the peace of mind. Also, I'm not doing anything so egregiously illegal or immoral that I would be concerned that anything that I'm doing could be like in some way used against me or whatever. But then again, given the, you know, long enough timeline, let's say this stuff becomes commodified by the government, then next thing you know, you're getting black bagged because you say the name of the wrong country or something like that, you know, or you get like, think about McCarthyism, where people were getting hauled in for having certain leanings and having certain attitudes. You know, that's a different world. And that's not currently the world we live in, but given a big old sea change, it could certainly happen. So things to think about.
Yeah, I mean, let's continue thinking about them. These are important points. I think I brought this up, God, maybe it's a few years ago. We're talking about big data and you or something like that. The problem that you're outlining, Noel, is crucial. And I think we can't say it enough. If you have these devices and you're or if you think any concerns about privacy and surveillance are kind of, I don't know, paranoid or self-absorbed or et cetera, the act of a hypochondriac in the conspiracy ward of a hospital, then what you need to realize is it's not that one of the big concerns is not that you are saying something that will be immediately used against you, or that you are doing something so egregiously wrong. The idea is that the laws might change later, and then you will be suddenly, retroactively, a criminal. Because the thing about certain sedition laws, when governments change, right, or when coups occur, is that sedition tends to be applied retroactively, right? When, for a very horrific example of this, you know, recall when Pol Pot instituted their bloody regime in Cambodia. Pol Pot's original name, by the way, was Salath Sar, which just sounds even more villainous somehow. But
yeah, people were very Sith-like.
Exactly. Yeah. People were being tortured, brutalized, and murdered, not like for a wide number of horrifically arbitrary reasons. And often it wasn't something that they had done recently. You know what I mean? Like they had a job back in the day, or they had gone to the wrong school back in the day. And those sure. activities were used as evidence of stuff because the laws of that regime, that new regime had new laws. So I think that's the theory. Like what if you're in a situation where, you know, your PA, your personal assistant is recording something, you're hanging out with your friends, and you're talking about like how there's a certain, I don't know, like a drug law you don't like, or there's something like there's a war going on and you think that war is something that shouldn't be supported. And then later, maybe years later, there's a new law passed that says it's bad business. It's the equivalent of a felony or sedition to say anything bad about any wars that the new U.S. government conducts. And then you get that knock knock from one of those Nightscope R2-D2s, and it does something even spookier. It just snaps a picture of your face and then tells you to report somewhere. and you don't know why. Oh, God, I'm scaring myself. I'm sorry, guys.
Yeah. All right. So there you go. Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted to say one more thing, you know, to counter that. And I completely, we're completely on the same page. You know, do we believe these companies and they say they don't attach any signifying information to this, these recordings? Right. But then again, what is logistically reasonable for them to store this data? How long is logistically reasonable? You know, I mean, are they really just holding on to people's information in the, you know, for the future purposes of blackmailing them or for the future purposes of cooperating with some new totalitarian regime? I think no. I think this stuff probably is largely designed for what they're saying to improve the accuracy of these assistants. I don't think there's necessarily nefarious motives in storing this and in some way using it against you. And it just doesn't make sense considering how many people have these devices to just store all this stuff forever, you know, and be able to recall it and pin it to a person.
Yeah. Well, there's nothing to counter because, again, what I said at the beginning was that if you are a more if you are like the hypochondriac in some kind of conspiracy ward, you're right. That is a very, it's a very extreme thing. And the extremity of the potential does have to be taken, weighed in context with the practical nature. Like how cheap is this to store forever? A profit motive makes much more sense than like saving up for at this point, fictional government. Like as long as there is more money to be made storing or selling the data than there is expense accrued by, you know, maintaining and storing it. And then also there has to be some like identifiable data is a tough one too, because as we know, you can learn a ton of stuff just from what would be considered allowable, non-identifiable metadata. You just have to like, combine the different toppings,
put
on the
pieces
pizza
together.
I'm
so
sorry.
No, please. I'm hungry too. Just follow the breadcrumbs, right? The breadcrumbs don't necessarily have a face, but they were put there by a face. I'm sorry. Or a pair of hands attached to a face. And you can learn a lot about this person's intentions, their associations by just following those things. And that could apply here too. But again, it's an opportunity cost, right? Like how long do we store this? Like if you store something, then you're not able to store something else unless you're just indefinitely increasing your server space, which just obviously a company like Apple or Google is capable of doing. They can afford me, but there's also not unlimited infrastructure to do this. So it is an opportunity cost. So they have to weigh like how worth it is it to hold onto this versus what else could we store? And I think they probably have a period like a security camera where it starts to overwrite itself.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe there's something. You know, I don't know the laws on this, but I'd be interested to hear, maybe depending on your country or state, there's a law that treats it like accounting data or something. You know how like corporations have to hold certain business records for X amount of years, and that's like they ship them off to Iron Mountain or whatever so that they don't take up office space. Maybe there's something like that, because I don't know the full extent of what they have in the EU. You guys have heard about that, the right to be forgotten law,
right?
Which I don't know. Is that an age cutoff where you just say like all the dumb stuff I did on YouTube before I was 18, forget about it?
Yeah, but how does that work? I know we've talked about this, and sorry if I'm misremembering, but is that does that involve being able to say I want this thing taken off the internet and expect full 100% effectiveness of that request?
I think that's an excellent question, because I'm not sure how enforceable that is. I think the nature of enforcement is that they can ask the company that gathered the data to delete it. But it's like the Streisand effect, right? Like once the signal's out there, I just don't know how you can make something 100% go away. I'm sure it's possible, but it's, I also, to your point, I don't know if it's something a normal person could do, right? Like that's because someone else can just repost it.
Exactly. And I found a thing. There was a case. The EU's top court has ruled that Google does not have to apply the right to be forgotten globally, meaning that The clarification was, currently there is no obligation under EU law for a search engine operator who grants a request for dereferencing made by a data subject to carry out such a dereferencing on all the versions of its search engine. So you might not be able to find this information about the person in the EU, but you could still in the States.
No, that's a Five Eyes level loophole, right?
No doubt.
Wow. So just assume what you do on the internet is public record.
To someone.
Yeah. Or what you do in your bedroom or in the bathroom, because we know you're still sitting on the pot. Look, it's okay. Your legs are probably going numb at this point. Yeah. Mine do, if I'm in there for an hour and 10 minutes.
this is like our bootleg version of what they call the NPR moment. Do you hear about that on the fundraisers?
The driveway moment.
Driveway moment. That's what it is. Oh, great. Yeah. We have a commode moment.
The commode moment. That's true, because we're classy like that. But yeah, I mean, it's something to think about. For me personally, not something for me to lose sleep over or be terrified. I'm certainly not going to go unplug all my devices, but I think, you know, it's something that people should be aware of. And thank you so much to Louise Superstar for sending in that firsthand account of exactly what goes on in some of these studies. But again, also to point out, this is from 2019, and now new versions of the operating system do have more specific opt-in options.
And thanks to James for writing in about the robots in Nightscope.
And thanks to you, Heather, for giving us the opportunity to talk about the strange, fascinating science of gut biomes. Thank you to everyone, in fact, who has spent this time with us today. Thanks to everyone who has listened to the show, who has written in, who has given us a call. We can't wait to hear from you. What do you think is the future of automated law enforcement? What do you think's the future of the world within your gut? And what do you think we're going to learn about what these devices and their companies know about us? Tell us all about it. Give us a suggestion for an upcoming episode you think your fellow listeners should either enjoy or need to know more about. And we'll tell you how to find us. It's the end of the show. We'll just do it now. We're all over the internet.
That's right. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter, where we are Conspiracy Stuff, and Instagram, we are Conspiracy Stuff Show.
Yes, and you can call us. Our number is 1-833-STDWYTK. Please call us. Leave a message. Tell us exactly what you want us to call you. Doesn't have to be your real name. It can be an awesome super spy-like name. Just tell us what you want us to call you. Let us know if we can use your voice on air. Then leave your message. Try and keep it as short as possible. And if you want to say anything personally to us or to Doc or to Paul, go ahead and do that right at the end of the message. You got 3 minutes. Do what you can. Try not to leave multiple messages, too. That would really help us. If you've got a longer message that you want to tell us about or give us links or something, the best way to do that is to send us a good old-fashioned email. You can find us where we are.
Conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.